Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am Ted Maxwell. I'm your host, and behind the glass, as he's been for a full year with those of us making our ways in the Jump in Tucson radio programming, is Matt Neely. Matt keeps me on time, on target. I'm going to try to keep him kind of engaged for this first session because we've got a couple things we want to talk about.
Well, if I can start off my civic engagement at this point, I would like to congratulate you, Dr. Ed Ackerley, Grant Kruger, Tom Moulton, and a cast of thousands for a wonderful event last night over at Union Public House, commemorating the first year and celebrating the first year and all this great content you're bringing. So,
and I found out we have more than seven members. Well, I mean, seven listeners. It's great.
We always find this out.
Yeah, no, Matt, and we could not have done it without you. You're the glue that holds a lot of the program as well as the programming together. Patty, Greg, everybody here involved at Bustos Media has been phenomenal on giving us enough freedom to do what we want to do and talk about the things we want to do, but providing us the support and let us be successful so far in our endeavors, and we're really looking forward to this going forward.
Well, I think, and I definitely wanted just to point out what a wonderful, warm, it was chilly out, but the space heater's on, but the warmth and the warmth of the group, you have a lot of great folks in your orbit between regular contributors and listeners and sponsors and supporters, and just a very warm crowd, and it was a very nice event last night. So congratulations on that, and let's have another great year ahead.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. I think the strength of Jump in Tucson is 5 days, five shows, different topics, different conversations. All are about our community, though, and this is 1030 The Voice is the only trusted local news and talk we have, and I think the station as a whole does a great job of telling that story, but Wake Up Tucson in particular, Jump in Tucson, and Bill Buckmaster definitely play a lot of local voices
and a lot of different perspectives.
Absolutely,
right here.
We've lost the art of conversations when we can't talk about disagreements and issues that go on, and that's what the engagement hour is truly about. The engagement hour's intent is, we know that we are a nation that it's bound by big values of freedom, liberty, and equality, but with that, it does come some rights and responsibilities. People have the opportunity to get engaged. I want you to get into it. Find something you're passionate about. We've got folks who serve our community through their military service or as first responders, healthcare professionals, educators, elected officials. They definitely put themselves out in front of the public for criticism and for support. But there's a lot of other ways you can serve your community. It's as simple as getting involved in your neighborhood associations or getting involved with the schools that's supporting your kids. You can get involved with nonprofits. We've highlighted the last year a lot of nonprofits in this community. Find something that you find of value, and then you've got, every one of us has time, talent, and treasure. And I've said it several times, I'll take the talent and the time over treasure quite often. Can't do it without the treasure, but the time and the talent is what makes so many of these organizations that give back to our community roll. And that's important. Chris kind of teased an issue that I do want to get to. My father passed away a couple months ago now, a month ago to this date. I went out to where he and my brother and his family all lived in a house together and helped my brother clear out some of the stuff that my parents who collected, and my mom was a borderline hoarder versus a collector, but there was a lot of stuff. But it's always amazing when you look through your family treasures and you see what they kept, what they found of value. It tells you a little bit something about them. And when I was up there, I found in one of his drawers a more pale colored, but now it's a little dingy dirt colored 20-page pamphlet. On the back of it is a picture of Senator Barry Goldwater and a quote that he made in his book, The Consciousness of a Conservative.
The Conscience of a Conservative, sure.
But on the front, the title of the pamphlet is The Forgotten American. It's from the Honorable Barry Goldwater, Senator from Arizona, and it's a statement of his proposed Republican principles, programs, and objectives. 20 pages. 20 relatively small pages was the entire platform that he was going to run over the next 4 years as he ran for president of the United States. The interesting thing about it is, like I said, it's only 20 pages. He's got a whole, I think, what's the total number of categories that he's broken it up into is eight. He's got eight different categories, or seven, foreign policy being the last one. The biggest one, believe it or not, is labor. Talks about labor, eight pages. But I'm just going to go through this at sometimes over the next couple months and bring people in to talk about specific issues. But there's a couple things that I did want to point out here. He says that the feeling has become, this is opening lines, during the past quarter of a century, America has become a society of competing pressure groups. Sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Competing pressure groups. The feeling has become almost universal that the individual by himself and unorganized is virtually helpless to achieve what we are at bottom, individual goals, economic well-being generally, a rising standard of living, improved education, cultural development, and dignified human treatment in social and economic relationships. So he talks about us not being able to do it as individuals, not being able to do it on our own. But he then goes into a conversation about, so how do we do it together? And how do we work in organizations? And he talks about organizations, everything from labor unions to consumer groups, civil liberty groups. And his opening line of his fourth paragraph is, but it cannot be emphasized strongly enough that these pressure group organizations often serve to aggrandize their own leaders and bureaucracy, as well as sometimes at the expense of the membership.
Mm.
It's... The forgotten American is the individual, mm-hmm. and the individual's role in the community, and the fact that everybody's we're trying to improve our quality of life, our standard of living, our safety, our networks, and all that. And too often we turn all that responsibility over to others. Thus, the engagement hour. We want to get everyone engaged, and there are so many different ways to do it. So I'm going to use this. Obviously, if my dad kept the Forgotten American from Barry Goldwater from 1961 all the way till my dad's passing, 63 years later, it had some importance to him. So sure. I'm going to take the time over the next several months to read through it. I know you heard Chris acknowledge his dad was a PC supporting Goldwater's campaign. So I'm going to probably reach out. I can't find anywhere online to print this out. They're willing to sell it to you, so I'm going to get a bunch of these pamphlets, and some of those who may or may not want them may be getting them to just read about it. And interesting. So we're going to go to our first break at this time. When I return, we'll have Jaime Molera, a registered advocacy organization up in the greater Phoenix area, and he's going to talk to us about the upcoming legislative session. So you're listening to Jump in Tucson, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're going back to some of the music that we started the year last year with, which was having Tucson in a lot of the language. We went down through a long period of time with Bruce Springsteen, and now we've been mixing it up. We're going to probably get a little bit more specific on different artists going forward for the next couple of months. Some things to keep us in the right phase of mind. So I'm honored at this time to have Jaime Molera, the founder and partner with Molera Alvarez. Full disclosure, he's the Southern Arizona Leadership Council's lobbyist that we use at the state legislature. But more importantly, Jaime's an expert, and I do mean an expert, on the intricacies of how the state legislature works, and he's got his finger on the pulse. He also did serve as the superintendent of public education, so he's got a lot to offer in that case, and I do believe education is going to be playing a big role potentially in this year's legislative session. So, Jaime, welcome to the show. I appreciate you, as always, calling in, being a regular contributor.
Well, good morning. I'm always honored to be on your show, Ted.
Well, it's great to have you. So Speaker Montenegro has said he's going to try to call in at 9:33, but okay. I might ask you to stay with me at least through him getting on, so that they won't have to just listen to me talk after this. So, Jaime, big changes, not big, But the election brought some changes and some results. There's going to be a larger majority of members in the House, a 33-17 Republican majority. And the Senate has also picked up, I believe, one more representative. How is that going to impact, do you believe, this upcoming legislative session?
Well, it's so much easier when you have just a little bit higher majorities as far as being able to corral the caucuses. Because the way the legislature works, Ted, by and large, is that the Republicans have a policy that unless everybody's in favor of moving forward, with some of the bigger issues like the budget. And if you don't have full unanimity, then it's hard to get deals done. And so you could have essentially one legislator that would do a veto of anything moving forward. And we saw that last year. And there was a lot of atrophy that occurred because everything got stuck. But now that you have a little bit higher majorities, you have a couple more in the House, and as you mentioned, one more in the Senate, then you don't have that one person that can block everything. And that makes a big difference as far as being able to run a more efficient legislature. You're still going to have big fights between the governor and the legislature. You know, the partisanship is going to rear its ugly head, and we all know that. But I think it'll be not as intense as it was the last couple of sessions.
Now, one of the things that comes up with that greater numbers, I mean, obviously the last couple of years, it's been one of those situations where the party just focused on keeping everybody in line and nobody could break ranks. It obviously cost former state senator Ken Bennett his seat in the House as he lost to incoming senator Mark Fincham. And when there's more, there's some tendency that you can find some compromise when necessary on the bills. It's not a fracture of the party because all the Republicans in the Arizona legislature are conservative Republicans by nature. Mm-hmm. But there's sometimes the ability to get things done. On the Democratic side, though, that requires that they have to have some folks that are going to come over. Have you seen any changes in the makeup of the Democratic membership of the legislature?
Well, and I mentioned on your show right after the elections. Well, I think there's more of a slightly moderation of the Republican ranks. And when I say moderation, I don't mean that you have more moderate candidates. I think they're very conservative. But for instance, you have somebody like Vince Leach, who represents
LD-17
Tucson area. And so he's a very experienced legislator. He's much more focused on fiscal government efficiencies, making sure that, you know, strong conservative policies are occurring. But he's not going to be as extreme or focused only on, for instance, election fraud types of issues. So I think having folks like him back in the legislature is going to, from the Republican side at least, be much more, I guess, what I would call the traditional conservative focus. Whereas Democrats, I think you saw a fairly hard move to the left. The leadership of the Democrat, by and large, is very progressive. I think even though they don't have the power to really do anything in the legislature, where they're going to be influential is putting a lot of pressure on Governor Hobbs to be much more to fight the Republican issues a lot harder. So that's going to be interesting. And I think the first test of that is going to be on Prop 123, when they have to renew that education trust land for continuation.
So you kind of led into the discussion. Prop 123 is a funding source that funds our public education system as a whole, and it is just that. It's the funds that are created out of that trust that was set up where all of our state lands, and that means any leasing, any fees paid to it, it all goes into that, into the corpus, and then the interest off the corpus is what we use. So
yes, sir.
How do you see that shaping up? It expires, I believe, at the end of the session, so it's going to maybe even take a special election. Can you kind of explain the potential loss of that revenue and how you think it's going to shake out in the legislature?
So the if they were not to do this, and you're right, it does have to be continued. The easiest path would be just to pass a referral by the legislature, so it goes on the ballot. I think they're looking at doing a special election in May, so they would have to get it done fairly quickly. It's anticipated that Governor Hobbs is going to call the legislature into a special session the moment that they enter into the regular session. So it'll be a concurrent thing that will go on so they can work on the both issues at once. Now, the difficulty is going to be that the Republicans, even though I think there's agreement to continue this, and by the way, this money is already built into the budget. So even if they were not to do this, the state would still have to come up with the money to continue to pay for, and it's about $300 million. I think what's at risk, though, Ted, are other issues. And we've talked about this also, infrastructure issues, transportation infrastructure, water infrastructure. There's a couple of big things that need to occur, but when you lose essentially $300 million, if that were to go away, and they'd have to make up for it in other parts of the budget, then that would be somewhat problematic. Now, the big fight's going to be, in a nutshell, the governor just wants it continued. They just want the money to flow to the K-12 education. But you have the leaders that are driving this on the Republican side. You have Senator J.D. Mesnard, and then you have Representative Matt Gress that are leading the charge that want to have more focus on teacher pay. And why that's, you know, most people would say, well, why wouldn't you want to do that? The teacher group, which is the AEA, Arizona Education Association, which is essentially the union for K-12 education, they're wanting to have the money to go to everybody, even classified staff, administration, it doesn't matter. Because it's interesting, their representatives, their membership is basically 75% non-teachers. So you can see why they want to see that money just go to everybody. So that's going to be the big fight, I think, at the beginning of the session.
So it's an interesting point, I think, that sometimes, including some people who are involved in policy, like myself, sometimes miss, that the Prop 123 money's already in the budget for education. So the loss of it does impact those other issues and could have a thing. So that, and it is coming up against a deadline. It's like you said, they're looking at a May election, so things are going to have to move fast on that. Has the governor given up the idea of increasing, right now it's at, I believe, 5.9% is the amount of money they take off the corpus, out of the fund. Is she looking at changing that to 8.9 still, or is she backed away from that?
They backed away. And it's 6.9%.
6.9.
It was increased, the original proposition, or referral rate, increased it from 2.5% to 6.9%. And that generates, I want to say, around $300 million, additional dollars that flow into education. So it's not an insignificant number. And the governor, I think, made a political decision. Had they been more successful in the November elections, and if they would have at least tied one of the, if they would have had a 15-15 split in the Senate, I think they would have been more aggressive about pushing for a higher interest to the 8.9 or 9%. But because the Republicans not just won, but they increased their numbers, I think very quickly they pivoted and said, well, okay, all we want to see is just a continuation of it and no changes. And the money just flows to K-12.
Absolutely. So, Jaime, what other issues do you think are going to attract most of the attention in the legislature this year?
Well, just the budget is always the focal point. I don't think we have a lot of the big fights that we've seen in the past years, particularly around reproductive rights for women. You know, I think that issue is fairly settled with the constitutional amendment that passed. But there's still going to be water issues, as you know, is a perennial issue in the legislature. I think that Gail Griffin, who represents Southern Arizona, is going to be a driving force. With the election of Steve Montenegro as speaker, I think he's going to give her a lot of free rein in looking at, and it's going to be very rural and agricultural focused. And that's one of the issues I think eventually we're going to have to deal with, because, you know, the water issues in Arizona, especially from a homeowner and business standpoint, are pretty significant. And so that's one of the things that I think they're going to have to tackle this session.
Absolutely, and I appreciate your insight. Jaime, could I ask you just to stay on until we see if Speaker Montenegro joins us? If he does, I'll have Matt let you know. And as always, you know I'm going to be reaching out every couple of weeks. I appreciate your great insight to the show and what you do both for SALC and for the state of Arizona.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate being on.
You're listening to 1030 The Voice, Trust Local News and Talk. We'll be back after the break with Speaker Montenegro. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour, and I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely's behind the glass, making sure we stay on time and on target. And now I've got the opportunity to welcome the newest Speaker of the House of Representatives for the state of Arizona, Steve Montenegro. Speaker, thank you for joining me today.
Ted, thanks for having me on, my friend. It's a pleasure, and Happy New Year to everybody as well.
Happy New Year to you. It's kind of a nice break. I think I was unaware that you're starting on the 13th and vice is the 6th. That's why I gave you a short notice call yesterday to see if you could join me, and I greatly appreciate you working around your schedule to join us here on Jump in Tucson.
Of course, of course. It's a pleasure to be on, and thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely, and Speaker Montenegro, the purpose of the Engagement Hour is to try to get people involved in their community. There's so many different ways to serve our community through volunteerism with nonprofit organizations, with political organizations, to service as members of first responders, healthcare professionals, educators, and as elected officials. And obviously that's a big part of what you've done so far in your career is service to our state and that's the entire state through your service at the state legislature. But I like to encourage this engagement by telling people stories. And when I had the opportunity to meet with you and get to know you better a couple weeks ago, I was really impressed by your story. So whatever you're comfortable with sharing with the listener base, I'd love to have you talk through your story and why that led to your desire to serve.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, first and foremost, you know, I think everyone has their story. Everyone has their upbringing, their family, their parents, someone, the family that helped shape their life, right? And for me, I am actually an immigrant. I was born in El Salvador, came to the U.S. legally when I was 5 years old. And it's just like any family, right? Pursuing that American dream, making sure there's no greater, most wonderful country on earth than our country, the United States of America. And so with that said, my mom and dad have always taught me, look, this is the country that where you can dream big. You can dream as big as you can dream. You just have to be willing to work hard for it. You can't just dream. You got to go out and work to make it happen. And so I've always grown up with that mentality. My dad used to tell me when I was a child, he used to tell me, Steve, in this country, it's impossible to go hungry. He says, it's impossible to go hungry, Steve. He says, people sell rocks in this country. They sell rocks. And so I grew up understanding that. When I got married, my wife and I took a cruise up to Alaska from Seattle. We went to Pike's Marketplace and we walked through. There's all these little, kiosks and these booths. And I remember walking up to a specific booth that had these big river rocks on it. And one of the river rocks said faith. The other one said hope. The other one said love. And I turned it around and it said $12.99. I remember when my dad had told me they sell rocks in this country, right? So if we can keep it, and that's just it, that more and more that dream is becoming unattainable for the average mom and dad, child working, or going to school. And so for me, getting involved is to protect that American dream, to have an environment that protects individuals, that justice system, that ability for us, the individual rights and liberties that are afforded to us by this Constitution, no greater country on earth. And so for me, I went to school here, this country. Nowhere else in the world is a story like mine possible. And so that's where my heart is. I've decided that, I tell folks, somewhere in El Salvador right now, there's a man with a a 43-year-old in a cornfield working his life away to provide for his family. And I'm the one that has been blessed with the opportunity to live in this country. So I can't just stand by and do nothing. I have to serve. I have to protect those constitutional rights and abilities for us to have for families.
Well, Speaker, I greatly appreciate you sharing that time, that story with us and with the members, because I do think it is something we quite often forget. This is a country of immigrants. It is a country that has grown based on those principles. And to see folks who come here recognize the American dream and the opportunity for it, but get engaged long before that dream may be a total reality, other than the living in the greatest country put in the world.
Right.
You at a very young age decided you were going to run for office. What led you to that decision?
You know, I really wasn't looking. My dad's a pastor. I was involved in youth ministry, and I was also getting ready for law school. I remember the day when I had a letter of acceptance in one hand, and I had my phone ringing because I was being recruited to run. And I said no for 8 months. I was like, I'm not interested in politics. I'm headed in a different direction. But it tugs at the heart. And I remember meeting with a professor who told me, Steve, I know you love justice, and I know you love law and order. He said, you can go and interpret laws in law school, or you can go and write them in the legislature. And that hit me so hard. And so as a 25-year-old, I'm like, all right, I'll do it. I'll run. I want to make a difference. And lo and behold, I did not know it was going to be that difficult, because it is not easy, right? Someone like me coming from a non-political background, no political dynasty, no name. And yet the people took a chance on me, and the voters gave me an opportunity, and I've been fighting the good fight ever since to protect free market principles and constitutional rights and individual rights and liberties, you know?
And that was 2009 when you first took office as a member of the House of Representatives, where you served for 8 years representing both the 12th district and then the 13th. And now you're representing the 29th as we do go through our every decade changing the districts in the state.
Yeah. And I've had the opportunity to I've kept my word. I've been true to the values that we hold, and the voters have said, Steve, keep fighting. So I've served in the House, and I've actually also had a chance to serve in the Senate, but I'm a man of the House, the people's House. I love it here better.
So that's a great thing. It's something I wanted to make sure you had the opportunity to tell. We've talked, I had Jaime Malera on right before you came on. We were talking about the fact that now House now has a 33-27 advantage. So it's widened, giving the Republican Party a little bit more room on losing members on certain issues, but it also may be a little bit more of an opportunity because of that to work on some bipartisan efforts that may get enough support to get through the governor's office. But what I was most impressed about in our conversation the other day was that it's the way business is conducted in the House, in the people's House, that you want to focus on. Can you kind of tell us what your goal for that portion of your job as Speaker on leading those conversations and leading the entire House, not just your caucus?
Yeah, well, look, these are conversations I've had with every member. And as Speaker, I want to make sure that we are focused on collaboration. We're focused on transparency, you know, and a relentless focus on delivering the results that we told people we were going to do. We were on the campaign trail, or we're, you know, knocking on doors, talking to families, talking to individuals. And now it's time the people have spoken to the point that we had 31 before, and the voters saw the vision that we painted forward. And I'm going to share that with you right now, what we have. But the voters said, okay, we agree on this vision, and it's time for us to come together and actually make it happen. And what I would do is I would tell you that decorum matters. You know, we represent the people. You don't go around and insulting people, poking people in the eye, right? People want us to also represent them with civility, with decorum, with respect towards the person we sit across the aisle from, or anybody in this chamber. And one of the things that we set out early on to do was the vision forward. And so the vision is really simple, preserving the American dream. And that means fostering an environment that ensures prosperity. Any Arizonan has the opportunity to prosper economically. And remember what I told you, if you're willing to dream big and work hard, you should be able to prosper in this country. The second pillar is going to be promoting public safety. We're a border state, And the voters have told us time and again that they want us to focus on the border. They want us to focus on combating the fentanyl crisis, the border crisis, the crime crisis that we're seeing, that wave across the nation, and it's hitting Arizona. So we want to focus on making sure we have safe communities and law enforcement has what they need. And third, the third pillar is going to be protecting individual rights and liberties. We want to make sure that we're safeguarding people's freedoms, defending their constitutional rights, ensuring that government is working for the people. When it comes to parental rights and school choice, parents deserve to be the ones that make the decision for the future of their children, not government bureaucrats. So those are the three pillars: preserving the American dream, promoting public safety, and protecting individual rights and liberties. That's what's going to set the tone with civility, with collaboration, with transparency, and with that decorum that the people expect us to have.
And Speaker, I think what I really appreciate there is decorum. You mentioned decorum. I call it, in a lot of ways, professionalism. You are elected by the people. That's who you represent. I don't think any of the members in the House or in the Senate, the state legislature, forgets that ever, because every 2 years you have to go back and make the case if you want to continue to serve to those who elected you previously. But personally, a professional legislature is going to be way more successful than a one that is not. And I think you, a big part of your leadership is going to help bring that professionalism back to the legislature. And people have faith in your ability to carry out your three pillars.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, this place deserves, the people of Arizona deserve us to be the best. And I would call it just common sense and civility. You know, we treat someone as you want to be treated. I think that that's something that's necessary. It doesn't mean we can't be passionate. We can passionately disagree with somebody. You know, the people have sent us to fight for certain principles. And when it comes to, I remember when I was 25, knocking on one of the first doors I knocked on. And one of the guys that opened the door, he said, "Steve, I'm going to give you a chance. But I don't want you anybody to push you around, because if they push you around, then they're pushing me around. So I want you to defend me, and I want you to stand up for me as a voter." So we can be passionate. We can certainly let our voice be heard. We just have to make sure that we're doing it with respect and respecting the people of Arizona, the other members in this chamber. And that's what we're hoping to accomplish.
That is well said. Speaker, can you stay around for one more session after this?
Of course,
and we can talk. We'll go into some of the specific issues that you think are going to be critical. But I love the comments about professionalism, the ability to talk, argue, disagree, and find compromise. Because at our core, I think everyone that serves believes this is the greatest country to live in. And I appreciate having you with us. That's the voice of incoming Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, Steve Montenegro, and he will be with us when we come back. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, and this is the Engagement Hour. Please join Jump in Tucson tomorrow with Grant Krueger for some food for thought. He will be hosting with Don and Mateo Guerrera from Barrio Bread tomorrow. So they will be on the show. There will be a lot of good conversation about their new upcoming projects.
I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, no, that would be a great one. Obviously,
today's not great.
Oh, thank you.
Which is awesome.
We appreciate that. I also want to thank Chris Edwards. He's coming on with Tucson Appliance as our most recent sponsor of the Engagement Hour. And I look forward to getting him both in studio and his advertisement on the air. But I wanted to reach out and give him some thanks for joining us. Speaker Steve Montenegro is with us right now, and he's laid out a vision for the House and for the legislature. And I think the fact that you went through the election process and were selected as Speaker, Steve, comes to the point of a lot of consensus from the party on what's important going forward, and you've kind of laid that out.
Yeah.
So I guess my thought now is, what are some of the specifics? We've got your vision, we've got your three pillars, but we know there's some education issues, Prop 1, 2, 3, the expenditure limitations always got to be addressed. We know water is going to be an issue. There's some rural counties and ag folks who are very specifically concerned with some of the actions the executive committees take, the executive branch has taken on their own. What do you see, at least in this first opening session, after the ceremony and the pomp and the circumstance, when you get down to it, what are the specifics of what you think are important for your house to address?
Well, you know, when it comes to that, we've got bills that are starting to be introduced now. And the vision is the course that we've, you know, that we've charted, the direction that we're headed. Some of the specifics are going to come from the bills that different members are going to be introducing. And I think that's where we have come up with, in speaking with all of our members, a robust, a very strong majority agenda. On the economic front, look, I just give you some of the areas we want to focus on, because specific bills, well, we have to wait until they're all introduced and session starts, so I can't comment specifically on the bills because we're not there yet. We still have a week to go. But I would venture to say, like, on the economic front, we want to make sure that we're promoting policies that lower the cost of living, living costs. We're talking about increasing access to affordable goods like housing, energy, just resources for everybody. Arizona has long been a low tax, light regulation, low regulation environment. And that kind of environment is what fosters family earnings to stay intact. And so we want to make sure that we are defending that low tax, light regulatory or light regulation environment, and actually go after deregulating more so that people have more freedom to be creative and to grow and to work hard. We want to give you one example: eliminate taxes on tips for tipped employees, things like that, that we can do that can help folks. That's on the economic front. You mentioned education. We want to make sure that the money is actually making it to the classroom, right? We've got sometimes things get wrapped up in the bureaucracy, and we want to make sure that we're focusing on student achievement as the goal, not a bureaucratic process, right, or systems that they put together. So we want to make sure that we shift that spending from the bureaucracy to the classroom. And we want to take politics out of the classroom. We increase transparency in public education. And we want to make sure parents have the ability and students have the ability to know what's happening in their classroom. So I'm just touching on some of the areas we see focusing on education. Security, the border, I mean, voters have spoken time and again. We are a border state, so we want to support the implementation of Arizona's Secure the Border Act that voters overwhelmingly, that was Proposition 314 that voters passed. It was overwhelming. So we want to make sure that law enforcement, public safety have the tools that they need and to support that implementation. We want to combat the scourge of fentanyl in the state. So we're going to see bills that try to approach that as well. You know, I can get into more, but these are some of the areas that I think are going to be very important for us to focus on at the same time that we are protecting, like I said, those individual rights and liberties, holding the line, because believe it or not, and I know you know this, but there's a lot of bills that might be introduced that actually try to take away parental rights and strengthen government and strengthen bureaucracy for programs, and we don't want to allow that to happen.
Well, that's always a case as you get two parties trying to both put their agenda and what they see forward. As the incoming speaker, and I've been calling you speaker, just, you know, trying to make sure you get used to it, because that's going to be your name for the next 2 years. Little joking there.
And I feel it. Trust me. You feel the weight in these offices.
Well, it is, and it's important leadership role. Have you had the opportunity yet to talk to the governor? Obviously, you and the Senate President Peterson, I know, are talking all the time on agendas and how to coordinate with the two chambers. But has the governor reached out to either one of you to talk about this legislative session and what may come up early? We hear a lot of rumors about a special session being called. Has any of that conversation started yet?
No, I have not heard about any special session myself. We've been focused on, again, preparing for this session, making sure the members have what they need, making sure that that transition has been smooth. We're going to have plenty of conversations as we move forward. And like I said, we want to find areas that the people have spoken. They told us the direction they want to go. And I think that we're going to give, like I said, the governor every opportunity to sign good legislation, to have conversations. The winners in this example have to be, or in this case and in every case, have to be the people of Arizona. So we're going to be looking to every area where we can find common ground, but we have to respect the will of the people too. The direction they told us, they want us to preserve the American dream, they want us to promote public safety and protect individual rights and liberties.
And Steve, I have no doubt you will do that. I look forward to you bringing professionalism and decorum back. I hope a couple times during the session I may be able to get you on, even if it's just for a quick 10-minute appearance. But I greatly appreciate you joining us today, and I wish you the best of luck in 2025.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it. We'll do it together, and I'll be here available.
Let us know how we can help, Steve. We always will. And thank you for everybody listening to us today. Join us tomorrow with Jump in Tucson. This is 1030 The Voice.